Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettnayer, and we have on the line with us Jeff Rubin. He's the author of Why Your World is About to Get a Whole Lot Smaller, Oil and the End of Globalization. He's going to be with us for the rest of the hour. First, we're going to be joined by Sam Matthews. She's the Executive Vice President of Central Vermont Economic Development Corporation. And of course, we welcome your phone calls to both of our guests. 244-1777 is a local number in Waterbury and surrounding towns. Toll free is 877-291-8255. Sam Matthews, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carl, and thank you for inviting me to join you today.
So why don't you begin by explaining to our listeners what the Central Vermont Economic Development Corporation is?
Yes, CVEDC, we go by our acronym, is one of the 12 regional development corporations that exist throughout Vermont. Our region is all of Washington County and the immediate three adjacent towns in Orange County, Washington, Williamstown, and Orange. To sum it up, our mission is to support the economic vitality of our capital region. We are available to work with all 23 of the municipalities in our area on infrastructure and economic development issues, and with the business community. I would say our primary focus is the retention and expansion of our area businesses, and we also work with businesses considering relocating to our region.
So you're a nonprofit organization?
Yes, we are governed by a 35-member citizen board of directors that's composed of municipal leaders, business leaders, lenders, and others.
And your funding comes primarily from?
Part of our funding comes from membership. Businesses and individuals who choose to join our organization, as well as we receive some funding from the state of Vermont through the Department of Economic Development.
Very good. Well, economic development is possibly going to get a curveball thrown at it. According to Jeff Rubin, with the high price of oil causing the equivalent of return to the high tariffs of the 1970s or maybe even earlier, you've been listening to this discussion about why your world is about to get a whole lot smaller. What's your take on it?
Well, first, I found Mr. Rubin's comments very interesting. I do, however, feel globalization is a powerful force that we must take into consideration. And I believe that the people in Vermont, our residents both here in central Vermont and throughout the rest of Vermont, are very energized about addressing this energy challenge. I can cite for you examples of businesses right in our own community that are working on solutions regarding our oil dependency. For example, Northern Power Systems, who manufacture wind turbines, and SB Electronics, who manufacture the power ring, which is a component for the hybrid and electric vehicle market. I also believe that our governor and legislature have been very proactive in working on addressing these issues. This legislative session alone, there were over five different bills that were passed that directly relate to either our food infrastructure system, entrepreneurial seed capital funds, small-scale hydroelectric projects, Vermont Village Green programs, and enhancements to the Fuel Efficiency Fund, all of which impact how dependent, as Mr. Rubin has pointed out, we have become. One thing we do need to keep in mind, however, is that the vast majority of our Vermont manufacturers and a great number of our service providers, their client and customer base is external to Vermont. And therefore, we need to be proactive as we find ways to mitigate the impacts from oil on globalization. Our climate alone dictates that we import certain products and food products. So we cannot be oblivious to this. But I find that Vermonters are very eager to find solutions to this. And I would agree with Mr. Rubin that manufacturing will see a resurgence. As a matter of fact, we could look to the rapid expansion of globalization and our increased oil dependence on the shift that began a number of decades ago when we started to decrease our manufacturing as a nation and increase our position as a service provider. So I don't know if Mr. Rubin would agree the pendulum always swings in both directions, but we are seeing that. The other thing I would note, though, however, in addition, I don't believe oil is the only driver. I would argue that there are both political realities, and we also are going to have to make a fundamental shift in our social sensibilities. As a nation, we are voracious consumers, and we've chosen to benchmark our success in life in unsustainable ways. So I would add to Mr. Rubin's comments that there need to be shifts in our social sensibilities as well, in order to meet this challenge and find a clear way through that continues to give us economic vitality.
Well, thank you for that. Jeff Rubin, Sam Matthews has made a lot of points. One of them that I thought was really interesting is that when we're looking at the globalization, our local economy here in central Vermont is not only importing things, we're also exporting things to the rest of the world, and that may be hit by high oil prices. How should we be looking at our export economies?
Well, as I say, globalization makes producers exporters and consumers importers. And in the model of globalization, it's to try to find your specialized niche, to be able to do something better than anybody else can and produce for the whole world. And I think we're moving away from that model. I mean, people are saying, well, you know, we can't grow everything that we want to eat in Vermont. Well, maybe we'll have to change our diets. You know, maybe it'll be too expensive to have an avocado salad in Vermont in the middle of February because the cost of flying that avocado in from Southern California or Mexico will make that salad cost more than a steak. At the same time, maybe folk in Los Angeles won't be able to import maple syrup from Vermont to put on their pancakes, and they'll have to make do with corn syrup or something else. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, what's going to happen is that we're going to probably go back to the diets that resembled more of our parents. I mean, I'll give you an example. When I'm from Toronto. When I was a kid growing up in Toronto, and you walked into the supermarket in the middle of January, February, you didn't see pineapples and fresh raspberries and blueberries. You wanted blueberries and raspberries, you get them in a can in January or February in places like Toronto. That didn't mean that people didn't eat. You know, people weren't starving when I grew up in Toronto, and similarly the same will be for Vermont. I think what we're going to find is we're going back to local diets, and in fact there's already a huge movement afoot to do just that. Every summer in the park that my house is right off, every weekend, there's artisanal food stalls there selling organic food from areas, from farms not far from where I live. And I think that's going to become a template for a whole lot of places in North America, that we're going back to local. And nowhere is that going to be more evident in our lives than in the diets we will have.
Sam Matthews, Jeff Rubin is thinking that maybe we won't have fresh pineapples in our stores anymore. maybe if I could extrapolate, oranges would be going back to something that we see in our Christmas stockings as something really special and don't see much the rest of the year. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I would argue that there's a balance to this. I certainly don't believe we are going to swing that wildly to the other side. I believe that we're inventive enough to come up with alternatives. Buy local is great, and we support it fully. But I also know that one strong characteristic of Vermonters is our entrepreneurship. and they will find ways, either through hydroponics or a variety of other ways, to perhaps enhance our food supply and our variety. I also, however, must again point out that the vast majority of our Vermont businesses export product, export their product. And although it may not travel as far, I do believe that with new technologies, new forms of energy, new focus on conservation and efficiency, we will find ways to continue to have a larger marketplace than within our state's borders. Otherwise, it would be catastrophic. And I don't believe that the financial economy and the marketplace will encourage an absolute collapse. I think Mr. Rubin is correct that there's a huge impact from oil prices. I also see in Vermonters particularly a real rise to that challenge of how do we do it better and more efficiently. So I would say we will address this issue to find better efficiencies rather than abandon the marketplaces that Vermont businesses now thrive in.
Jeff Rubin, Sam Matthews has raised the question of alternatives, and this sounds a lot like some of the comments that were written at the New York Times website in response to a blog post about your book, Why Your World is About to Get a Whole Lot Smaller. One of them reads, if we find a substitute for oil, none of this will come to pass. What are your comments on that?
Well, a couple of comments. First of all, I'm not suggesting that Vermont doesn't export. I guess what I'm suggesting is Vermont will be exporting to Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Quebec, Ontario. In other words, its regional neighbors, not China. The second point that you're asking is, what about new technologies? What about the post-carbon age? And, you know, history has shown that you run triple-digit oil prices long enough, and it will light a path to new technologies. It will lead to the discovery of alternative energy sources. But we don't have 20, 25 years before we can retool to the hydrogen economy or whatever the new fuel source is. Triple-digit oil prices isn't something in the distant future. Triple-digit oil prices is something that folks in Vermont are going to encounter in the next 12 months. And in the next 12 months, we're not going to discover an alternative to oil. So in the next 12 months, and in the next probably 12 years, the solution is going to be to find a way of doing things burning less oil and burning less energy. And in the here and now, the single most important thing we can do to free the economy from the constraints of triple-digit oil prices is to go from a global economy back to a local economy. In 20 years, when we can find a new fuel source, we can all go global again. But until that happens, I think we're going to go local.
Let's break this down to the types of products that are going to be most affected by high oil prices. In your book, Jeff Rubin, you say that importing a shipload of steel is going to be highly affected by high oil prices. But if you bring in a 40-foot container full of diamonds, then the oil prices, no matter how high they get, are going to be a trivial part of the value.
That's
of that.
Right. It's all about how important freight, and I might add refrigeration in the case of food, freight and transport costs are in final selling prices. If that 40-foot container is filled with diamonds, then the freight cost, even if it doubles or triples, is still a relatively insignificant portion of the final selling price, and therefore should not be particularly disruptive to trade. But if that container is holding steel, for example, we've already seen that added on about $90 to the cost of a $600 ton of steel. That was, you know, that was significant. That was a 15% increase right there. And then if you want to talk about food, which not only has to be shipped, but refrigerated, then the price increases become exorbitant. I'm not saying that every piece of textile that every shoe coming over from China will be stopped and dead in its tracks, because not all items carry the same freight costs. But a lot of the things that we now take for granted from coming overseas, everything from steel to machinery to food, that is going to be stopped dead in its tracks.
So Sam Matthews has raised the question about a number of products that are made here in central Vermont, including wind turbines and the power ring component for hybrid vehicles, that the wind turbines, at least, are kind of big and bulky, but they are something that would produce energy in the future. So how would these energy technologies be affected by rising oil prices, would you say?
Well, I mean, these energy technologies will find a larger and larger niche as triple-digit oil prices, get higher and higher. And that will be true for wind as it will be true for solar. But, you know, it begs the question, what happens when the wind's not blowing? What happens when the sun's not shining? The beauty of hydrocarbons is it gives you power no matter what the weather is. And that's why I get back to my earlier comment that, sure, we live long enough with triple-digit oil prices, that will incent technological change, and we will ultimately find new forms of energy to free our dependence from oil. But in the here and now, we got to find a way of reconfiguring our economy and reconfiguring our lives so that we burn a whole lot less.
Sam Matthews, your response?
Perhaps if I didn't live in Vermont, I'd be deeply discouraged by Mr. Rubin's comments. But I'm very encouraged for two reasons. Number one, again, I've mentioned before, I find the citizenry, the residents of Vermont, very dedicated to lessen their personal dependence on oil. And we're seeing that with proposed small hydro projects. We're seeing it proposed with community heating systems and the legislation that was passed this year to encourage two pilot projects regarding that. So I find Vermonters ready for the challenge. As far as what we export, I agree with Mr. Rubin that we may be hit by import issues, but we export highly value-added products. So luckily, we are not exporting, save for our beloved maple syrup, cartons and cartons of pineapples or oranges, crates and crates of them. We are actually exporting high value-added products that we do believe, more and more of which are in response to the whole green economy call for action and alternative energy and renewable energy. Solar, I believe, from what I've been observing and reading and knowing about Vermont businesses here in our own backyard in their research, will find far more efficient ways to maximize their benefit even on a cloudy day. And I think there is no one answer. Mr. Rubin is correct. When the wind doesn't blow, what do we do? And certainly, we enjoy the same brisk winter you do in Toronto. But having said that, we are looking toward the alternative energy products. And I'm aware of businesses, NRG, for example, that has converted its entire heating system to a wood pellet heating system in order to free themselves from their dependence on oil. So I'm encouraged. I do believe we are rising to the occasion, both our business community as well as our residents.
Our guests are Sam Matthews, who just spoke. She's the Executive Vice President of the Central Vermont Economic Development Corporation, and Jeff Rubin. He's the author of Why Your World is About to Get a Whole Lot Smaller. I'm Carl Ettenayer. You're listening to Equal Time, and the number, if you want to join the conversation, is 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. And Jeff Rubin, who would you say that your book is aimed at? Is it aimed at policymakers? Is it aimed at investors? Is it aimed at people making decisions in their own lives?
It's aimed at number three, everyday folk, because at the end of the day, we can do very little to prevent oil prices from getting back to those triple-digit levels and even going higher. What we might be able to do is to make sure that the next time that happens, it doesn't have to have the same devastating impact on our economy as it's just had. And the key to that isn't about the Federal Reserve Board. The key to that isn't about the U.S. Treasury. The key to that is about the decisions that each and every one of us make in terms of where we live, what kind of jobs we do, how we transport ourselves, how we eat. Those are the battlegrounds, and those are the battlegrounds where we have to win if ultimately we're going to wean ourselves off oil. And I'm quite optimistic, being an economist, that we're going to do that. Because you know what? As much as I'd like to sell books, when gas is $7 a gallon, you won't have to buy my book. You'll know exactly what to do. And that's why I think the market's going to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
What would you like the readers to do, the everyday folk that this book is aimed at, after reading the book?
Well, you know, I'd like them to understand what kind of fuel prices they're going to be paying, so that if they're going to buy a vehicle, they buy the right kind of vehicle. Even more, that they don't buy a vehicle at all and they start taking the bus. But of course, if they're going to start to take the bus, there better be a bus, and they better get their politicians' attention, that instead of bailing out industries like the auto industry, which are industries doomed for obsolescence, that those billions of dollars go into public transit, because those are the things that people are going to need.
Do you have the book with you, Jeff Rubin?
I do.
Would you mind turning to
page... I think I'm on a book tour without a copy of my book?
Would you turn to page 251 and read that last paragraph at the bottom that just continues into the next page?
Sorry, I got to find it. What page did you say again?
251. This is right near the end of the book.
It says, we have already seen...
Yes, sir.
Okay. We have already seen the suburbs will slowly or quickly empty out, perhaps shrinking back to the villages that had gobbled them up, which will once again be surrounded by farmland. Before that happens, the orderly avenues and cul-de-sacs of suburbia will no doubt go through a wrenching transformation, during which they will first be slums and then gigantic salvage operation, as all those incredibly scarce building materials get put to better use, rebuilding and retrofitting urban houses. In the abandoned exurbs of Fort Myers, Florida, thieves are stripping air conditioners for parts and selling them as scrap metal. Once that process has run its course, things will be built once again with local materials, rather than the uniform prefabricated products available at big box home renovation stores around the world.
That paragraph there sounds pretty dystopian, and yet you have this optimistic, the market will prevail and sort things out view. Can you explain how that works?
I mean, because the new economy that we're going to see is going to be a much more diversified economy. We're not all going to be working as baristas at Starbucks. We're going to be working at, you know, jobs that we thought were gone forever, high-paying jobs. We may not have the same purchasing power that we had before, but we're certainly going to have a more diversified economy. We're certainly going to have a greener economy, because by burning less oil, we're going to do more than 1,000 Kyoto agreements as far as CO2 emissions. And maybe we'll get reacquainted with our neighborhoods and become much more attentive custodians to our own little worlds, which is likely to make those worlds a whole lot better places to live in.
Hmm. Sam Matthews, do you see some neighborhoods in Vermont or isolated houses out in the hills being stripped for materials so that people can move closer to each other and they won't have to transport themselves with cars?
Well, I think this is a far more complex issue. First off, Vermont finds itself a rural state now. And I believe, especially it intensified over the last 5 years, there have been strong efforts both by our communities, our village communities, as well as by our leadership in the legislature and the governor.
15 seconds, Sam Matthews.
To address maintaining our rural makeup in our village centers rather than needing to revert back to them.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And we've been talking with Sam Matthews. She's the Executive Vice President of the Central Vermont Economic Development Corporation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Carl. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Dr. Rubin.
And Jeff Rubin is the author of Why Your World is About to Get a Whole Lot Smaller, Oil and the End of Globalization. It's available at locally owned independent bookstores everywhere. Jeff Rubin, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
You too. So what to do as the world gets smaller is a theme that we'll continue to explore on Mondays on Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettenayer. That's it for today's Equal Time. Travin's in tomorrow. Anthony Polina will be in on Wednesday and Thursday. Don't forget to check equaltimeradio.com for podcasts of the shows that Travin and I host. And I'll try to get up to today's show by the end of today. Usually it's by the end of Tuesday. Artie Levine produced the show. Next week, we've got Barry Simpson and State Senator Ginny Lyons as our guests. Another interesting show. Stay tuned for music with Jack Donovan, who's back. Thanks for tuning in.